A caller says, saying to raise crossings is all well and good, but it's no good when you're in the back of an ambulance. You'd want to be well strapped in. I don't think an ambulance ever really could rally through there, even in an emergency in that such a built-up area. I take your point, though. I wouldn't like to be that person, not contradicting you. There is a law in Australia that if you don't use the crossing to cross the road in a court, there's a €300 fine for risking an accident. Maybe we need that here. That is jaywalking. They frown on it in the States as well. It's time to take the barriers off Logue's Bridge and get the bypass that's been promised to us. There are lots of trucks and lorries passing through Bella Buffet. The pollution must be off the charts. But there's not just concerns in terms of crossing the roads in Bella Buffet, Stranorter and Letterkenny, etc. Buncrana also has issues, according to Margaret. Hiya, Margaret. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. You don't have a very positive experience of crossing the road in Buncrana. What's the situation?
No, very fortunate. They're not down in Kilt.
Yeah.
Because they'll go flying on and out the road, and I don't know what you would need to do to stop them. Because there are no forewarnings. There are warnings just beside it. Long before it, and long before stoplights too, because the traffic lights at Supervalley, they fly through them too.
Mm.
I really don't know what we would need to do to get through their heads. They're supposed to stop.
So you have, in a couple of them that you're talking of, they're black and white zebra crossings, and they have the lights, but you still feel, in fact, it's not feelings. You've been nearly knocked down 10 times, you told us.
Yeah. And they're a little blind gear with a dog. And, you know, my heart's in my mouth.
Mm.
Because, like, if they don't see me crossing, how are they going to see a blind gear with a dog?
Yeah. Would you like to see ramps or something to try and slow the traffic down, Margaret?
Well, they'll have to do something because they come in and out that Cockhill Road.
Mm.
Like lamplighters.
Like what?
Lamplighters.
Right, you're going to have to explain that. No, I want you to explain that to me.
Like speed care.
All right, okay.
Risk care.
Aha, okay, I get you. All right, okay. Well, listen, your point still stands. You've got that lived experience of feeling like your life is in your hands. We can't rely on luck, Margaret. You know, to have 10 close shaves, it's just not good enough. And I appreciate you helping us highlight it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too, Margaret. Thank you very much for your time. So let's move on to Wellness Wednesday. And we are joined on the programme by Dr. Kira Steele and also Sinead O'Brien, both Clear Air Advocacy Ireland representatives. A very good morning to both of you. Thank you so much for
good
your
morning,
time.
Good morning, Greg. Hi.
Good to have you with us. Okay, right. Now, Dr. Steele, I'll start with you. We have data, don't we, that shows shows the impact non-clean air is having on particularly our young people. And we've touched on this in, I think it was in a different couple of contexts in the past. So it's good to get sort of a straight-up convo on this specifically. Yeah. So what's your observations, or what are the observations, and what's your concerns?
So the reason we want to focus on clean air in education is, first of all, the physiological makeup of children. Their lungs are smaller, their respiratory rates are higher, they are more exposed to indoor air quality and pollutants than adults are, for example. They're more vulnerable. But what we wanted to focus on was the focus on the Minister for Health on absenteeism from schools in the education sector. So what we want to call on the minister to do is to actually focus, as well as the unexplained absence, to actually focus on the illness absence that has hugely increased over the last 4 to 5 years, but that we can actually do something about that, because there's emerging evidence now from a lot of studies in Bradford, the Class Act study, and California studies would show that increasing ventilation by 4 litres per second per person actually reduces illness absence by each increment of 3.4%. So we're not actually utilising the tools of ventilation and filtration adequately within our education system to address the 128% increase in explained illness absence over that period of time. Like, it's a massive increase that also needs focus, is what we're saying.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Well, I mean, unless the schools are more crowded, is it new schools that are contributing to it, or what might drive such a dramatic increase?
Well, I suppose it coincides with the start of the pandemic, but the pandemic has increased a focus on indoor air quality in schools in general terms. There's other respiratory viruses that are focusing on at the moment. Measles is airborne, for example, RSV, notifications to the HPSC of strep A, pertussis, RSV, influenza have all increased over that time frame as well. But we do know that children spend about 90% of their time indoors. So their indoor air exposure to pollutants indoors is really, really high. But also over that time, the focus on PM2.5 and other pollutants like VOCs, xylene, for example, pollutants from paint, they're all emerging as really important air pollutants that affect children in school. For example, Ireland has one of the highest incidences of childhood asthma in Europe and in the world. And we know that increased incidence of infective respiratory disease can not only trigger asthma, but also cause it. So these are all compounding impacts of indoor air quality on children in our education system that need focus.
Sinead, we have the solutions, don't we? I mean, we're not starting from square one here. We know what would work.
Yes, and I think just to go back to the report that was published by TUSLA, I'd just like to highlight that that's 2022 to 23 data. Showing a 60% absence rate among students in primary and secondary school, which is very high. I just like to highlight that the government's response to that is to sort of focus on attendance and kind of pressurise parents to sending their children to school.
Well, I was going to get to that actually, because there is a presumption that this is about refusers or no-showers or bad parenting.
Yeah, and I think that we really need to focus on the 60% that we know that 60% of children aren't attending school due to illness. Like that is the known. I suppose the other 40% is less known, but may very well be related to that 60% who are, absent due to illness.
And most parents listening too, it's not a choice you make for the crack, because in many cases it could interrupt your work. You might not have child care options. You happen to call on a relation. You don't willfully keep kids back from school. There's generally,
exactly.
No, I mean, there's obviously exceptions, but there's nearly always a reason, and it's complicated to plan for it.
Yeah, and I would just like to emphasize again, I don't think parents should be penalized for doing the right thing and keeping their children home when they're ill for their own children's sake, but also so as not to spread pathogens in the classroom, making other children sick. And so something that I'd like to just point out, but just to add your question again.
The question was really about we have the solutions to this, or at least we have the stuff that would improve the air quality in schools.
Yeah, so I suppose Kira already alluded to it, ventilation, like just simply opening windows would make a huge difference. But also introducing the HEPA filters, which I know many classrooms had introduced in the early days of the pandemic. But I think there's been a general reluctance to implement them because there's a fear of costs, energy costs, but which are actually unfounded because a lot of the technology is quite energy efficient. I know that there is the HSA, the Health and Safety Authority, have a guidance and a code of practice that actually requires employers to have clean indoor air quality for their employees, of which teachers are. Now, I find it very sad that we're not actually looking out for the welfare of children in classrooms, because obviously we can see that being in often overcrowded classrooms with no ventilation is having this negative impact on their health when we have 60% absentee rates due to illness. So having just simply those tools employed would make a big difference. But I do also think the kind of the behavior change that would, you know, keep people home or allow people to stay home from school when they're ill would also make a big difference in not spreading infections throughout the classroom. And I think that's something that parents should be commended for, not penalized for. Because as you say, it's not, they're not keeping their children home for the crack. It's very oftentimes inconvenient, but it is beneficial to the child and to the rest of their classmates.
Yeah, Dr. Steele too. That. Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Sorry, evidence shows that there's a ninefold return on the cost of introducing HEPA filters into schools and increasing ventilation and filtration in tandem to quality air standards. So there's a ninefold return on that investment, you know, studies have shown. Also, there's other tools that can be used to make air quality in classrooms visible that have been deployed in other countries, for example, like Latvia. Like that there is, well, there's a dashboard in Latvia from all the schools in Latvia, and it shows CO2 levels, humidity and temperature levels in every classroom in Latvia. And making that visible within the classroom environment for teachers, parents and policymakers really incites
great knowledge to have. Here. I think most parents would. Dr. Steele, also too, I think often we are, unless we're directly affected by this, people might think we're talking about, and we are, I suppose, we're not excluding anyone, but just the general population and to try and limit them being off school for being sick. But there's also an awful lot of children who are immune compromised or are going through cancer treatment or whatever, that I'm sure parents listening who are parents of those children and are probably anxious with them going to school but want them to participate, right, and have as normal lives as possible. Presumably that would help to protect those students as well if the air is cleaner.
Absolutely. And I think anybody with asthma or anybody with a disability sometimes can feel very excluded from the education environment because of you know, poor air quality or perceived risk within the classroom, which is actually a real risk. Contracting infectious disease, one parameter in the classroom, can induce disability. I mean, the long COVID rates in children are 7.6%. That's UK data, but there's a presumption that it's similar here in Ireland as well. But somebody who's immunocompromised needs to have a safe environment in order to attain an education. But there's also other things, like there's data showing that performance is increased, cognitive tasks in maths and English are increased with reductions of PM2.5 within the classroom. So it's not all about infection. It's about education, learning, resilience,
brain function,
inclusiveness within the classroom and education environment. You know, so there's a lot of parameters to be addressed. But what we want, just in response to the minister's focus on unexplained absence in schools, you know, it's good to have data on that as well, because potentially some of that is also illness related. But we have an increase of 465,000 in post-primary schools in 2017, illness absence, to 938,000 in 2022. So that's a massive increase. Why not focus on that? Mm. You know, I mean, there are maybe controversial spendings in the last few months, but we know that there's a ninefold return on benefit on spending on indoor air quality within the education system. Why not do that?
You know, Sinead, someone might be listening and say, you know, I ate my dinner out of the sink when I was young and it never did me any harm. You know, what about that sort of notion that you need to sort of be exposed to the sniffles and the coughs and what have you? Or maybe Dr. Steele, you want to take that one. And that, you know, I don't mind, it's up to either of the two of you. And that this is, you know, and this helps build up your immune system and protects you into your teenage and adult years.
No.
Sorry, I'll let Kira answer that one on the health point.
I think people have confused a hygiene hypothesis of, which is also debunked, on the reduction of allergy or autoimmune disease by in exposure to, infectious pathogens. That's a controversial theory. It's been largely dismissed with knowledge in the last few years. And contracting a serious illness like RSV, for example, which can not only trigger asthma, but actually induce asthma in children. The idea of catching a pathogen to be healthy isn't really holding sway anymore in the scientific community. Okay.
So, Sinead,
just to add to that point, a lot of harmful pathogens actually begin with cold-like symptoms, like measles, you know. So catching a cold, it could actually lead to something much worse. And we're unfortunately living in a time of vaccine resistance and hesitancy, where many people aren't getting their childhood vaccines that would actually, you know, reduce the spread of a lot of these pathogens. Just to add to what Kira said.
And Sinead, just a question for you. You know, I mean, obviously Dr. Steele's outlined there the financial argument. There is a return on this, so it's cost neutral. We found 9 million for the pouches, which I'm suspicious that Dr. Steele was alluding to. And also too, you know, we've seen a spike in absenteeism, so there is an issue there that needs to be resolved. Where's the resistance coming from here? Because we're told we're awash with money. I wonder, does the Department of Health come back to you and say, well, this is our reaction to what you're proposing?
Well, I think that it's the Department of Education that is holding back. And I know for a lot of our members, when they approach their schools and their principals, and they point to the HSA guidance that shows that there is a legal obligation to improve indoor air quality. And the schools say, well, we haven't received a circular from the Department of Education. And so I think they're having gone the route of putting this little code of practice out there, but not then issuing a circular, it provides a bit of a legal buffer for the department to say, well, look, we've provided the guidance, we've provided the information, it's up to the schools to implement it. But without having actually said anything directly to the schools, they can, you know, the schools are sort of in the dark on this. And so there's definitely a communication issue, whether it's deliberate or not. I can't obviously say, but that seems to be where the problem is. And maybe there's just a fear that it's going to be too costly to roll out the HEPA filters. But also, I suppose there's the liability aspect as well, that, well, we've allowed children to go back to schools, you know, in a COVID world now, like it's kind of just a standard infection that's out there, and people have been harmed. And so maybe there's a fear that there's legal liability there that they don't want to have to deal with. Yeah. But like you can't ignore these numbers anymore. And like, as I say, that's 2022-23 data. We haven't even seen the 2023-24 data. And that's 9 months overdue now. So I can only imagine how bad those numbers are going to become.
All right. Last word to you, Dr. Steele. Kira?
We want to focus on improving indoor air quality in schools for educational and health purposes for our children within the education system in Ireland. And we call on Minister McEntee to introduce that really as urgently as possible.
Thank you very much for your time, both of you. I really appreciate it. Very informative. And we'll see what the listeners have to say. Take care. Thank you very much indeed, Sinead O'Brien and Dr. Kira Steele. Thank you very much indeed as well. Okay, you are tuned to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Our next guest is Jason. Hi, Jason. How are you keeping?
How's it going?
You're a kidney dialysis patient for the past year in Letterkenny, and you're waiting on a scan. How are you feeling? What toll does being a dialysis patient for a year take on you? If you don't mind me asking, Jason.
Well, it's been a big interruption to my life because I have to go for dialysis 3 times a week for 4 hours. So I can't really travel anywhere further out of Letterkenny because I have to be back within a day or so to receive dialysis.
On top of that, too, you require a scan for a procedure. And what has happened to you in that process, Jason?
At the moment, I have a plastic tube in my chest that hangs out, which they hook up to the dialysis machine. Now, the next stage from that is to have what they call a fistula, which means they tie up two veins in your body, and in order to then do dialysis, they then use needles, and it's a better flow and it does better dialysis. But you need to have that done as a surgical procedure. Back in February, I had to go to Galway to have a scan done on my arm, so they can, an ultrasound scan to make sure that the the veins are good enough to, yeah. to go ahead. The scan could only be done on a Thursday morning. They wouldn't do it any other time. They only do it then. So I had to go down the night before, get bed and breakfast, go to the hospital, get the bus back again. It lasted about an hour, and I was told things would be talked about when I get back.
So you for this brief scan, you had to, because of bus times, you had to go down the night before, pay for bed and breakfast, then make your way to the hospital, presumably, I don't know if it was in walking distance or another taxi, then maybe collect your stuff and get back on a bus. Presumably, you had to defer dialysis as well as part of this process.
Yeah, I had to change my appointment times. I then received a letter 3 weeks later saying I was required for another appointment. Mm. It didn't exactly say what the appointment was for. Spoke to the nurses in the renal unit at Letchkenny, who I've got to say are exceptionally very good.
Yes.
They spent 2 to 3 days trying to contact Galway, actually trying to get information of what it was about. And it transpired that I had to go down for this appointment. And it was on a Thursday. Again, it would have been my dialysis day, so I had to change all my dialysis times all around. And the appointment was at 20 to 5 in the afternoon.
Oh, right, that's a problem.
So I got a bus down in the morning and had about 15 minutes to spare getting into the appointment. The appointment lasted 5 minutes, talking to a vascular doctor. And he basically just confirmed the results of what the scan was 2 weeks before. Yeah. The last bus was at 4 o'clock to Letterkenny, so I had to have another overnight stay before getting the next bus available from Galway. And I didn't get home till after 6 in the evening.
So obviously, other than the important part of dialysis, and you talked of the pleasure the staff are to work with in relation to that, as a dialysis patient, is that the only real service they're provided locally? Because it sounds like you're having to go up and down for Galway for everything else.
Yeah, and it's the same for the rest of the dialysis patients in there. And for them, for a lot of them, it would be even a lot less hassle. Some would be in wheelchairs and all sorts. And you're just not catered for at all. And the equipment used for the scans and all that, they have in Letterkenny. So some of the stuff could easily have been done in Letterkenny.
Yeah. It's you would struggle to make sense of it all, Jason, because I mean, obviously you're a vulnerable patient as well. I hope you don't mind me saying so, but I presume, are you waiting on a transplant?
I haven't had any information about that. In order to go onto the list, you need to fulfill certain criteria.
Okay. You're just not there
which
yet.
You
okay.
need to fulfill. No.
Right. But still, that, I presume that you're medically vulnerable, and going up and down on buses and the travel and everything else is something you could certainly do without. All right. What can we say? It's just another example of a geographical disadvantage. I hope everything goes well for you, Jason, going forward. I do appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for sharing that with us. Okay, let's take a break. So we heard from a senior county council manager. He called for a community-led boycott of holiday home owners in order to bring high numbers of vacant properties back into use and combat the housing crisis. He suggested avoiding patronage of businesses or services owned by absentee landlords, refusing engagement with holiday home owners, our fellow countrymen in many cases, public campaigns, posters and community meetings encouraging solidarity, presumably against the holiday home owners. Our local councillor, councillor local to Donegal, Councillor Micheál Colm McGill-Nasbeg, he's an independent, and... did you happen to have a conversation with Tom Gilligan today, Micheál?
Yes, Greg, Jim Atetu, Agustin Deshery. Yeah, I had a conversation with Tom earlier on, just in relation to this, where we were both discussing, obviously, the question that we're on here to discuss, because about a year or 2 years ago, I had suggested our proposed at a council meeting that the holiday homes that are lying vacant, and there's quite a lot of them, and that are hardly ever used, and some of them are only used maybe 2-3 times a year, and some of them could be a couple of years before they're used, that we do a compulsory order on them and take them into back into full use.
Can I just put something to you on that question? Sorry. If I work my butt off in Derry or Cork or wherever it is, like really work my butt off. I don't trust the banks, right? I don't trust pensions either. I don't want the banks gambling with my money. And I decide that I'm going to invest my hard-earned cash into a property in West Donegal or in Bundoran and holiday in it and maybe move to it or sell it so I can be self-sufficient in my retirement. Why should a county councillor be suggesting that I should be forced to sell that to the state? Is that really what you're proposing, that you would compel people to sell their investment to the state? Is that not like something you'd expect Putin to do?
Well, look, I think if you're putting it in the manner that you're putting it, I think it's a far more complex question than just that there, that blunt. But in terms of how our community is organised. And our community is managed and organised in the best interest of the capitalist classes, hence the management of it through the Dublin government, where they have chosen not to build adequate housing for our community, which then leads to our children, middle-aged people, being forced to the four corners of the earth, another whip on their back to emigrate, to find a home where they can rent or buy and to better their lives. So we need to look at how buying investment, because you are cash rich, into a community that is cash and generally poor and socially and economically deprived, and how that impacts on us, in terms of economically, socially, culturally, environmentally, and it does have a massive impact on us. And all we need to do is take lessons from other countries and other areas around Europe, will say Cromwell, or if you look at the Basque Country or Catalonia, or we could look a lot closer and look at areas like Dunfanaghy, where people there are forced out of their own community because well-to-do people, like you said, who don't trust banks,
it's not necessarily well-to-do.
Are being forced out of the area.
These are hard-working people.
Yeah, but so are the people who have no homes, are hardworking people.
Okay, so who are you blaming?
So
are you
the
blaming,
people who can't afford, can't afford their rent.
So are you blaming
hardworking people?
You're looking to punish people, our neighbours, our friends. You're looking to punish them because of the failures of the government. You've said that yourself. You said the government has failed to deliver affordable housing. And your one of your solutions is to actually punish. I mean, you throw words out, colonialism and capitalism, and you know, often. And I'm not pulling you off.
Don't forget the old imperialism
and imperialism and all that kind of stuff, right? And yet here you are, blaming the government for a problem and actually looking to take assets off the people to fix that problem. I actually can't believe my ears.
No, well, I don't know why you can't, because as a socialist republican, I've been talking to you about this going back many, many years. So I don't know why you can't believe your ears. Look, I'm talking about how we organise our communities and our societies, where the wealthy, where the very, very wealthy in our society do not dictate how our communities are organised. That it's organised, working class communities are organised in the best interest of working class communities.
Maybe I think your house is too big. Maybe I think your house is too big.
And it probably is.
Well, listen, I don't know your house. I'm not having to go. I literally don't know what house you live in. Mm. But why don't I take your house, right, and organise the community, take your house, move you somewhere else, and put someone in your house? Would you be all right with that?
But you're bringing it right down to the individual here.
No,
and I think what Tom is talking about. No, but you are bringing it down to the individual, and I have no problem.
All of these people are individuals. All of these people are individuals, Micheál.
No, but
it's not a gang of holidaymakers or tourists.
No, hold on here. No, they're not all individuals, right? There are people and companies coming into our community who are buying up property. We see it, vulture funds right across the whole country, right? That are buying up swathes of apartments, right? Because they have the cash. And then there's local communities in Ballyclea or on the towns or anywhere. And especially for us on the Western Coast, for very, very wealthy people. Because it is a luxury to have a second home. right? And I am not making the comparison for Mary that her Uncle Joe, who unfortunately passed away, had left her a home, or Grainne, or Paddy, who lives in Scotland because he had to emigrate and he wants to make sure that he has a home next door to his aging parents, and he wants his nephews and nieces to know his own family. There's a big difference. There's a big difference in where you have somebody from Ballyclea or Cork or Belfast or wherever they're from who are so cash rich that they think, you know what, I'm just going to start buying property in areas like West Donegal or anywhere else, because for them, it is extremely cheap. For us, it's extremely beyond our ability to buy. And that increases the value of property in the area, increases the value in terms of buying homes and also renting homes. We only have to look at Airbnb.
But do you not believe that we should
be restricting that?
You talked of Dunfanaghy, right? Okay. What would Dunfanaghy be without tourism? What would Downing's
what
be
would
without
Dunfanaghy
tourism?
Be without tourism? Yeah. What is Dunfanaghy without its local population?
Dunfanaghy would be Dunkaneely. It would just be another village.
I don't know how you're making that.
Because what's the industry?
So
what's the industry? My point is the reason there's so many hotels, so many restaurants, new bars being opened is because of people coming into the area. It's a tourism destination. That's why
people come. It is a tourist destination, but let's look at how that affects the local community. Like, Greg, I've been talking about housing as long as I've been talking about housing, as you well know, right? So, if we're going to show empathy and discuss and challenge, both on radio or on the streets or at public meetings or at the council level, in relation to why we have mothers without homes, fathers without homes, people sleeping in cars, because that's the reality that I see in most days in West Donegal and in other places. Yeah, we need to look at the root cause of this here. Okay. And I think for the reason why I came on today was to discuss what Tom Gilligan had discussed earlier on at an SPC.
Okay, but let me ask you this, right? So let's say, for instance, I'm 25, 23. Okay, I've done 6 or 7 years in college, busted my balls to get a qualification. I choose not to drink. I choose not to smoke. I drive a modest
vehicle. Why would you compare it to drink driving?
No, listen, wait till I'm finished. I don't drink.
Sorry, excuse me.
I don't smoke. I drive a modest vehicle. I don't go out much. I do all of this because I want to try and gather money up. I'm very frugal and I save my money. And then I get to 40, 45, right? And I've managed to accumulate 200 grand. Like, you see me as the enemy. You see me as a different class of person that shouldn't be able to buy a property in a certain place.
You're using polarizing language.
You're not going to use polarizing language. You talked about vulture funds and all that kind. That's not what Tom Gilligan's talking about.
That's not what he's talking about. And you're bringing it down to individualizing.
Because this means pulling at heartstrings of human beings. Yes, of course. And you're trying to avoid pulling at the heartstrings by blaming the government and foreign vulture funds when you
I'm trying to have a wider discussion, Greg.
And I'm loving the conversation. I'm loving the conversation. But my point is if I am that 22... of course I have to do my job. If I do that 23, if I live my life from 23, 24 frugally, and I manage to accumulate that money, what am I supposed to do with it? I don't want to give it to the banks because they're rip-off merchants. I don't want my pension to be gambled with. I might invest in a little bit of property. And now I've got Tom down in Mayo saying I should be protested against.
Look, how do you feel morally? Because that's what you're talking about as morals, and you're bringing it down to the heartstrings of individualism, right? Because that's what you brought the conversation to, right?
Yeah.
And that's fine, and that's a challenge, right? But how do you then, with your non-smoking and non-drinking and hard-working, And you come down to West Mayo. Hold on, somebody's ringing me.
That's all right. Tom.
Somebody's ringing me to tell me I'm on radio. Come out. And you're sitting down, and Mary's in a caravan that she isn't allowed to be in because of the planning laws and the county development plan.
Yeah.
And you're sitting in your fine house because you're very frugal with your money. Mm-hmm. But yet Mary works three jobs a week during the week, and then does part-time bar work at the weekend, just to put food on the table for her three, four children.
And what does Mary think?
Now, tell
what does,
me,
okay, what
tell,
does Mary...
Tell me where. Tell me where society is.
Okay, will you tell me this
then?
So Mary's sitting in her caravan, right? And there is another family of people that are here legitimately fleeing a war that are getting... that are getting €800 in cash to rent a house next to them. Why, you don't like,
Greg,
you don't like that, do you?
No, I am, and I will come on tomorrow morning and have that conversation
no,
with
but
you.
But my point
but
is...
But that's not what the conversation's but about. The conversation's
it's about a fair society.
The conversation is about holiday homes. And I have no problem whatsoever to have that conversation with you. I'll come on. If you give me a time now, I will discuss that with you tomorrow. I'll come into the studio and sit down and have that conversation.
No, it's fine. But don't be so defensive.
To go back,
it's just a conversation.
No, I'm not, but you've shifted it completely away from why I was asking.
What about fairness?
You know, I know, absolutely it is about fairness.
How did Caroline know you were meeting
Tom Gilligan? Let's get focused. Because I had it on my Facebook.
Right,
and plus, it's Caroline Orr. She knows everything.
Okay, I was going to say, she knows everything. Come here. I have nothing against any group of individuals, but it's just this overreach of the state into people's own pockets. And then to guilt them to not be able to enjoy their hard-earned money because of Mary. You know, it's not fair because it's the state that should look after Mary,
people,
not the person who's worked hard all their life.
But the vast majority of people, and when you're talking about hard working, right? I am talking about hard working. I'm talking about Mary. He gets up in the morning, right? Mm. And goes and cleans these holiday homes.
Yes.
And then when she's finished, she probably goes to clean the school. And when rich people tells us to constantly work hard, that we will reap the rewards for it. The reality of it is we don't work in class, people don't. We barely be able to. I spoke to a woman today who has to leave her home with X amount of children and a partner, and now the rent has absolutely gone past double, and she just can't afford it.
Okay.
Council won't allow her to put a caravan on a piece of land
up.
That she wants.
I'll get you. Okay.
What's driving the rent up is Airbnb, holiday homes, and this area. The areas that we represent, that I represent, and that I live in, has now been realised to be, that's a beautiful area. Let's start investing into it, because on the views of the very wealthy, because I'm not talking about individualism here. I'm talking about people who have vast ways of money and they can come
in. Which I have absolutely zero accumulated wealth. In case anyone thinks
I want to be very clear too on this, right? Because I know people will text in. Yes, many, many, many years ago, I worked extremely hard and worked my bollocks off, as you said, right? And then I accumulated a few pound, right? And I bought a small piece of land, and on that small piece of land, there is one holiday home on it now. And I'm publicly stating that.
So you have a holiday home?
Publicly. No, I don't have a holiday home. I sold land so I could then try to buy a home for myself.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Just throw it at the start.
I've never
but
had
can
land.
I be very opportunist?
I've never
can
had
I be
land,
very
nor have I never sold land.
Well, I do. I'm very, very lucky. I do have land because my father left me land and an old auntie has left me land.
And I am so
it's
pleased
not a
for you.
Pile of land,
and I'll tell
but
you,
it's still my land.
And I would be very upset if the county council or the government tried to come and take that stuff off you.
Well, for me, because of my ideological position, and hence that I am a communist, and if there was a revolution in the morning, I would have no difficulty to give up whatever 5-6 acres I have.
Well, none whatsoever. The thing is
can
that
I be opportunist?
We'll never have to prove that. Very briefly,
can
if you don't mind.
Just because I know the conversation's coming to an end, I think we need to listen to what Tom is saying. I think we need to listen very carefully what Tom is saying.
Yes.
I think there's quite a merit in what Tom is saying. And I think we need to have a very open, frank discussion around that there. But going back
which
to before
is what we
finish.
We just did.
Which we did, and it's healthy, and I love it, right? I absolutely love it. But tomorrow, we're having a public meeting on neutrality in Anagra at 7 o'clock, if people can come along. And then on Friday, we're having the drama backed by popular demand at 7:30 Doors and Bisha, and it's mostly the cast and written by those involved in CU Burn. Now, there's been opportunist for you.
My hoop, take care.
Thanks, Craig.
Chris Ashmore is with us. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. you, Greg. It.
Simple question to start off with. Do you have a food business idea? Lots of people seem to have.
I don't personally, but yes, good question. if you do, well, you might be interested in the next food starter program. Now, this is run through the local enterprise office, basically a chance to sort of see what's involved if you wanted to set up a food or a drink manufacturing business. Now, this doesn't start until September, but, you know, sometimes it takes a while to think these things out and whatever. Time, so look, if you go to the local enterprise website, you can find more details on that. And it's a good platform. And as we know, there's lots of great small enterprises out there in the food and drink sector here in the county. And long may that continue.
Yeah, and lots of support there and all over the place. And there's a clinic coming up in Dunfanaghy too soon.
Yes, there's they call it an in-person business support clinic. It's in Dunfanaghy at the end of June. Again, a little bit of advance notice. So if you're in that part of the county, it's a chance to get an overview of just what supports and services and help is out there. And a lot of people will be pleasantly surprised that there is a helping hand there for getting you just those early stages and getting off the ground with something.
Yep, 70 local charities are going to benefit across the country from a 1 million fund. Why not one from or two from Donegal?
Indeed, AIB has launched, it's called the Community Fund, and the beneficiaries in the past have included the BlueStack Special Needs Foundation here in Donegal. So if you go onto the AIB website or indeed inquire your local branch, there's details about how you can nominate a registered charity to get a slice of that pie.
Listen, if you're a charity, get on to your followers to advocate on your behalf too. Use your social media. Donegal Women and Business, does this mean, is this to do with the longest day of the year?
Well, not really, no.
Okay. No, my point being is I don't want to talk about the longest day of the year in any context.
We're not.
But that
to
being
talk about
said, I don't want to be reminded it's coming. But anyway, listen, I'm going to be because there is a Donegal Women Business event.
Yes, they're hosting a summer solstice leadership evening. That's what it's called. Yeah. And it's before they have their summer break, the Donegal Women in Business Network. They have a guest speaker called Marie Gleeson. She's a former Irish Navy captain and now very much a sought-after speaker. She's a leadership coach, so it could be a very interesting evening. The venue is Oakfield Park in Rafoe. It's on Thursday, the 26th of June, and great for networking and finding
Brilliant
out
events,
more there.
Yeah.
And mentioning Oakfield Park, this weekend, a big drink and food and craft fair on there over the weekend. So let's hope the weather stays good.
There might be showers,
that.
But for the most part, there's a lot happening this weekend, and the weather's not going to be terrible. Don't be discouraged.
No.
Restaurant of the Year Awards.
Yes, these took place in Dublin, and great to see a number of local enterprises doing well here. The Old Glen Bar in Glen, Kieran Sweeney there, a fine restaurant, best chef for Kieran Sweeney there, so well done indeed to him. And Martin Anderson of Sonder in Letterkenny for the best use of social media. So a couple of awards here for the Northwest. Yeah.
Right, what's coming up on this week's podcast?
Well, just before that, best of luck to Seabound Engineering. Now, we featured them on the show here before. They're based in Greencastle. They specialise in aluminium vessels, particularly for the shellfish industry, and they won the Donegal Enterprise Awards last December, and they are at the National Enterprise Awards, this week.
And they are very impressive.
Yeah.
Right, let's get to the podcast then.
Yes, so the podcast this week, I've been speaking with Fáilte Ireland's Joan Crawford, who's the Wild Atlantic Way manager here in Donegal, so with all this bright sunshine, topical, spoke to her to get a snapshot as to where we are in terms of tourism in the county, how things are at the moment, what's coming down the track, all sorts of things happening. We're going to get the spin-off from the Open at Portrush Golf, very much in the news, and Highland Radio's Sean Quinn indeed was at the launch of, there's a new golf brochure out featuring all the golf courses in Donegal. So in this clip that we can hear from her, she's been speaking about, you know, how over in recent years with people going online before they go to a destination, a lot of people come here already knowing about some of the big ticket items, and then the whole thing is to sort of keep them here and also for them to discover things that they're not aware of.
Yeah, they'll come with their bucket list. Like, they'll come, I want to do Thanet Lighthouse, I want to do Glenbay, I want to do, you know, the Slieve Lakes. They want to do the iconics. So for us, it's about creating the experiences around those iconics as well. But I think people are pleasantly surprised. They always feel as if they didn't allocate enough time when they come, because they see then there's so much more to do. So hopefully that entices them back for that second visit. But for us, you do need those flagship attractions to pull people in first and foremost before you can get them dispersed around the county.
On the one hand, you know, Donegal has so much to offer. We're relatively underdeveloped, but we do have a capacity to take a lot more people in.
We do have capacity, but one of the big things for us going forward is it's not going to be about volume. Volume tourism isn't necessary. We will want that quality tourist that's coming, that's going to spend more and stay longer. And it's about that staying longer for us is really important. So it's important that we work with the industry to create those smaller experiences that keep people in areas for longer.
Yeah, for sure. It's all about staying around and spending, but you need a hook, don't you? And we've got loads of hooks, but there are gaps then too in certain parts of the county. And people approach things differently. I don't think I've ever planned anything prior to going somewhere. But I haven't gone anywhere since before COVID. But lots of people like to plan stuff out. And that's why the Wild Atlantic Way, I think, was so successful, because it was very easy. And then you've got surprises, right? But you've got the basics there. You've got the basics tenure of a 3 or 4 day break.
And of course, now, because you can go online and look at the things, you're going to see YouTube videos. There's all sorts of drone footage. And
this is why
it really
I focus
enhances
so much about the toilets, because it's at that point where you see the Google review of a set of toilets and it's 1 star, wasn't up when I was there, it was a disgrace. And those are the things that the local authority and the government need to be getting right to support the industry, because people do factor those things in.
Absolutely.
And you do all of that in advance. All right, brilliant stuff. Chris, the podcast is available now. Have you clicked the upload button? We're good to go. And so you can stream it right now on our website or any stage that you want. There's a massive back catalogue of fantastic podcasts there, by the way. If you have any interest in business, or even just the people involved in business or the people of your local community, there's hours and hours and hours of quality listening there. And Chris, it's also broadcast at the weekend on Sunday.
That's right, Greg. It's on just after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. And if you want to contact the program...
I'll ask you that. What if anyone wants to contact you?
Well, you can email me on businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Good stuff. Are you going to head away yourself at all this year, do you think?
Prague. Going to Prague.
What is that? That's a city break, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what is there to do?
Well... Funny, I was looking up stuff online just to get an idea.
Are we talking like visiting architecture?
Going to do a couple of day trips out. And just, it's a part of Europe I haven't been to at all.
And what's the food reputation like, is it?
I'm not too sure on the food, but it's a big city, so there's going to be plenty of choice.
I think, which is the city you can fly into in Spain? I took Leo over a few years ago. Valencia, is it? I don't know. Anyway, it's kind of a city, but it's on the beach. It was quite nice. All right, Chris, thanks very much for that. We'll chat to you next week. I do appreciate you calling in and seeing us. That's Business Matters, available as a podcast right now, broadcast after 6 on Sunday. Listen, thanks so much for listening. Thanks to those of you who watch the show. We appreciate your calls and texts as well. We'll do it all again tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock.